Session number 10767, rule 8.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, Reel 8. We were talking about your time on the loose lens, La Basse front, in the front line. We were talking about what you did during the day. Would you have to, as a corporal, supervise the sentry rota, or would you be part of the sentry rota? How was it organised?
Well, you took your turn. You all had a turn at it.
And how long would you be on?
You get up now, and then an hour after, change places.
And who would organise?
Well, the NCO in charge.
And that would be a sergeant, would it?
No, not necessarily, corporal.
So you'd do it?
Yeah.
And would the sentry on duty would find a chink then, and they'd look? Would they look constantly, or would they just look every so often?
No, they wouldn't. They'd look down again, but they wouldn't. As I say, it was a pretty quiet front, and there was no danger. The only danger was of being shelled out.
I'll come to shelling, yes. When you were just in the line on this typical day, and you weren't asleep, but you were sat about, what would you do to amuse yourselves?
Have a sleep.
That was your recreation, was it?
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't talk to each other much then?
Oh, you were talking every minute of the 24 hours, aren't you, really?
What sort of things would you talk about?
You're talking about home and where you should be and where you shouldn't be. You should be going to the hip tonight.
So you wouldn't talk about the war?
No. No, you didn't know. You never knew. Very, very, very little news of what was taking place anywhere, unless you could hear the gunfire. Then you could see shells and guess eggs. See? Sort of style. No, you never got any communication. Perhaps you get a letter stating, you know, I saw so-and-so had gone, you know, and this, that and the other. But you just got to go on and going on and day to day.
Was there much artillery fire?
Yes. I think we had the best artillery in the world. And they only made a very big blood bloomer on the Somme by the weight of the shells that they used and cost millions of lives. A battery had opened out, bang, 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 and you hear them whistling over your head. And you used to say, best of luck. And the muzzle would move away from that spot because Jerry could find a detector and measure it and the next day give it a bit of a bashing.
You admired the British artillery then, though?
Oh, yes.
What did you think was so good about them?
They were that good about them was that Jerry was scared of them. I knew Jerry was scared of them, and I knew later on in my career abroad, and they admitted it, that they were under barrage of the British artillery. You had not much chance.
So you saw it as a way of hitting back?
Yes.
What about the Germans? Did you get much shelling from the Germans in your front line?
Oh yes, we got now and again.
Because it was a quiet sector, wouldn't it?
Yes, it was a quiet sector. Very quiet. Just now and again you get the odd shot coming over, you know, just to keep you awake and that. But while I was there on the Basse front, I was the Captain Maxwell come one morning and he said he moved away into a... a junction trench, you see.
And a communication trench.
The front line. It'll come to me in a bit.
Okay, carry on then.
And you know, there was this frame. And he said, "Do you know what that is?" "Yes," I said. "Yes," I said. "It's a rifle grenade thrower." So I said, oh, he said, you know, I said, oh, yes. All right, well, he said, in the morning, he said, see what you can do. Well, it was just like a bicycle rack in front of a shop. You've seen them, haven't you? But there was a room for four rifles with a taube. That's the magazine in on your front, you see. And they were leaning, and they had a cup on, you see. And there was a box of grenades, and they had a rod. Not quite a foot long, a copper rod, a steel rod, screwed into the base of the grenade, Mills's grenade. And I said, right. So next morning, just before dawn, as dawn was breaking, I went and I peeped and I thought, right, that's it. A junction of a trench. Eh? It'd be 150 yards away. So I thought, right, so I adjusted my what's name with sandbags to keep it from moving, you see. And then I loaded up, put my grenades in, put my ammunition in, blank ammunition, special kind, and it had a rod, iron rod that you put through two on the right and two on the left triggers, see? And it was all in the middle with a string hanging from it that was about, you could have it 10 yards long, see, so that you could get almost round the corner before you give it a big jerk and it'd all go off together, see? When you took the pins out of your bomb and that cup restrained the lever from springing off and igniting the bomb, see? So I got it all set. Oh, round the corner. Dead on. So I sent him four lots, quickly. I thought, that'll do for now. So during the day I cleaned them up, the rifles, and everything was ready for the next morning. So the next morning, right, all four in again, and I extended it a bit, elevation, right, banked it up, bang, right. About a minute afterwards I heard the plop. You could always hear the mini worth for being fired off. How they fired it, I don't know. I intended to find out how they fired it. Such a big thing, cigar shaped, and it come through the air just like a big sausage turning. And when it dropped, it made a crater bigger than this room. And it dropped just behind me. So I said, ta-ta for now. I went further away, and then it went plop again, and it dropped right on my rifles. And blew on sky high. So when he come round, he said, have you got on fits? So I told him, I said, I gave him 16 bombs yesterday morning on a junction that I noticed. I said, I got spot on. I said, and they just fired my first
four.
Are we?
Your first four.
No, I'll tell you in a minute. It's gone, come to me again. Battery, as you might say. Maybe I fired my first battery, bang, plop, behind me. Next one, dead on. So when he called me, he said, have you gone on for it? So I said, I've done very well. I said, but grenade rifle material left, or anything. Why? So we kept round him a loot. And I said, there's my rifle over there in the mud. Get that when it goes dark. Oh, he said, we'll have to abandon that, see, and we never did it again. You see, he had such, it was such a good thing, that For him, Jerry, with that mini woofer, I thought it was a marvellous thing. I didn't know what... We had, you used to use toffee apples. You've seen them, haven't you? Eh? Well, they were cumbersome things and they looked unbalanced to me, you know. And I used to hear of them going off, but they never used them much. We never used them.
Had you been trained in the rifle grenade? Because you seemed to know what you were doing, or did you just work it out?
Well, I can describe the Lewis gun and take it apart and describe it and whatnot and put it back again. And I can describe the Milsage bomb, and I can describe a rifle, and I can... most things military I can do.
Had you been trained in the rifle grenade, though?
Well...
Because that's...
Well, you see, when I was doing the battalion runner, and they were out marching, I used to go in the regimental sergeant's hut, and I used to study his manuals.
So that's how you knew?
Did I tell you about drilling and getting my first stripe?
Yes, you did.
The little officer said, marvellous, brilliant.
So that's how you were familiar with these weapons, from looking at manuals?
Well, I went on a course to a place called Wimmeroo. Do you know it?
When was that?
Do you know Wimmeroo?
When was that, though?
Yeah, that's where Jerry had a big gun there and whatnot during the last war.
When did you go to Wimmeroo?
I went to Wimmeroo. When was it now? I think it was about after... I think it was either... Somewhere about July, I think. Somewhere about...
So that was after you'd left the La Bassée front, then?
Yeah.
But you'd known enough to fire them while you were there?
We learned everything there. Artillery, tanks, which was very rare.
I'll come back to Wimmeroo, then, but you'd known how to fire the trench, the rifle grenade, before you'd been on the course, then?
Well, I learned it there as well, yes.
But that was extra?
Yes, well, you see, when I was in England... as a lance corporal, I went to Ingatestone. That's in Kent, you know, somewhere around there. And we had a course of bombing there.
And that had included rifle grenade. So there wasn't much artillery. We've covered mortars a bit. Was there much sniping in the area?
Only when they saw you on the toilet, you know. Or the first chance that they'd wait for you. So you'd see a certain action, you know. And they'd say, he'll have to come back, you see, and Jerry was using the telescopic rifle so that he got the centre cross on you and he'd have you.
Did you suffer many casualties from sniping?
No, not very many.
Did you have to, was it something that was in your mind? Were you careful or...?
I was fearless, but I took damn good care that I knew how to take cover. 6 inches of soil was enough cover for me. And I could lay prone behind it, and you'd have a job to deserve me.
Was there much small... Did you ever do any sniping, or try to do any sniping? While you're at this...
No.
Abassay front?
No.
Would there be much... Would you use your rifle at all, firing?
I used it later on, you know.
But while you were on the quiet sector, would you use it at all?
No, I used it when he was attacking.
Did he attack while he was there? Did he attack while you were there?
No, I didn't attack, but I was shooting at him.
No, but did that happen while you were there?
No, not at Lewes or Lens.
No, right.
No, that was on the Cambria front.
Was there much small arms fire? Was there much machine gun fire from either side?
Now and again, you'd hear a machine gun go, you know, perhaps 300 yards away to your right or left, and they'd be in an elevated position, you see, a kind of a mound, you know, and they'd have a bit of practice of firing, you know. I don't know whether they could have it all set ready from observation, where to fire, you know, something like that.
It sounds like that was that there wasn't much general small arms fire. No, that was the exception rather than the rule.
Very.
So it was pretty quiet.
Yes, quiet.
Any gas while you were there?
Well, I've got to come to Newport for that.
But while you were...
No gas there.
How were people standing up to the trench routine while you were there?
I thought they were very good. Yes.
What about your officers? You said you didn't seem to see much of them in the front line. Why was that?
Well, I don't know what you what they had to do. They had nothing to do, really. There was nothing to do. If they wanted to go out and say, go on, I'll have a walk round, you know, a little bit of snooping and all that and whatnot. But, you see, you're in a certain position. If you had two choices, you'd have a two-headed penny and you'd toss it up and say, heads, stay where you are. I know I would.
So the officers didn't do many inspections of the front line?
Only now and again.
So who was in control? Would that be the senior NCOs, the sergeants? And
whoever, corporal, lance corporal, whoever was in charge of that squad or section, he'd be in charge of it.
So you're, at that time, it was the NCOs who
were
in charge?
You see, let me point this out to you. A lot of officialness, you know what I mean? Official stuff. Was done away with, you see. It'd gone. You couldn't walk up to a fella and say, put your hat straight. But what's the use? But if you was on the square, you'd have a good balling hat. All that had gone. You understand me?
I do, yeah. So, but the people who were actually running the front line, were the NCOs.
And yes.
You didn't, and the officers were just came around every so often.
Yes, they got their orders from the captain, and perhaps it's your turn to go, you know, and do it in turns to do a bit of a tour.
Did you know that the officers had or hadn't better conditions than you? Because they were further back, weren't they?
Well, I surmised that they were a little bit better off. Did every opportunity of picking the best spot out of sight.
How did you feel about that?
Nothing to do with you.
What about during the night?
You had no say in anything like that.
What about during the night? What would happen during the night then? Because this was when you said you were busier and you couldn't sleep.
Well, what you might term is you were on your toes, you might say. And for instance, when we were on the Le Bassé front, we had a new colonel. Our old colonel didn't come out with us, and a big 6-foot fella, and he come round to what the hell? Aye. One morning, the new colonel, he come round this bay, and he stood there, and there was only a young boy on sentry at the other end, and he shouts, "Who goes there?" And it was just before dawn, like, you know, a bit of dark, and never answered. So he said, "Who goes there?" And he never answered, so he shouted, "Corporal!" And there was a corporal, Monks, that was in charge of that little section. He said, "What's to do, Sam?" He said, "There's a bloody fella here," he said, "and he won't answer." "Oh," he said, "won't he?" So he had a revolver, so he fired a shot over his head. And the colonel dived back again. Then he got up and he started playing bloody hell with him. And then, of course, afterwards, he knew very well he was wrong. See? And when he was, who goes there, he should have said MR, Manchester Regiment, you see. That was our code. See? And he didn't, so he didn't aim at him, he aimed over his head. And he didn't say anything or put him on the peg for it, anything like that, because he was only doing his job. But if it had been a Jerry, he'd have fired him, Bob's your uncle. But I thought that was a stupid thing to do, really, in a sense. Only he was testing the nerves of a young boy. So,
when you were on sentry yourself, did you find it difficult to keep awake?
Yes, on occasions, yes, you did. You did. You felt a bit drowsy now and again, and you got to kick yourself then. Yes.
Is that how you did it?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, you find yourself nodding. Hey, come on. Oh, yes, it's very dangerous.
What could you see? Would you at night actually look over the top, or would you still look through these chinks?
No, I was sat on top of the trench. I was open for any loose fire going on. I was that comfortable.
You see,
not moving, you see, not moving.
It's so when you'd actually sit on the sandbags or the...
Yes, yes, just a little higher up than the sandbags. And you'd be half looking like that, you see, over your shoulder. See if there's any movement or anything like that. But there never was. Daddy was doing the same.
You never saw anything. No. Weren't you vulnerable there to just random fire?
Well, I'll come to that later, you see, as regards being vulnerable, because that happened when we were at Ypres.
Okay, well, we'll leave it for now then.
Yeah.
But were you aware that you might be vulnerable?
Oh, yes, yes.
But you still...
Didn't,
Is that how everybody did the sentry?
Well, some did and some didn't. Some stood there, you see, and just I'd hope that's all. But as I said, it was useless.
What about other jobs? You mentioned wiring parties quite a bit ago. Did you go on wiring parties ever there?
No, I never went on them, but we had people going out of on a bad night, you know, and they'd go out and do a bit of patching up. But get scurry back again as fast as they could.
How come you weren't on that job? Was that just chance?
You look at it, you say, oh, that'll be all right. That was no obstacle, really speaking. There was no obstacle to wire.
Wasn't it?
No, if you've got a pair of pliers. Big pliers, you could plow through in no time. Pling, 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 pling. Yeah.
So you...
It only stop anybody running through or anything like that.
But surely that's what it was there to stop.
That's where it was handicapping, you know. Yes. Oh, yes.
Any other job? Did you ever go on any covering parties?
Or no.
What about...
Sometimes you'd get word to say that there's a patrol out tonight.
British patrol?
Yes, you see. Well, what were they patrolling for? They could see what they could see in the daylight. What patrolling... I couldn't see any purpose in it. It was a case of being brave and reckless.
Did you ever go out on a
no,
patrol?
No.
So you didn't go into no man's land? No. What about when the patrol did go out? Would you be given the password, or would it just be the...
Well, if we saw them, we'd know it was our lot, you see. We were told there was one out, you see. If it was a quiet night and we saw one, well, we'd probably give them a bit of a warning shock. If it was ours, it would be the other. They'd run our way. If it wasn't, we would fire to them on the other way. Well, we was on patrols.
Was there anything else that you did at night?
No.
So it was quite quiet, really? When you weren't in the line and you were out at rest, would you always go back to the same place?
No, not always.
Which places? You mentioned Anakan. Was that a radio?
No, that was only a little blown-up village, that. That was only a little blown-up village. No, we'd go further back than that. We'd go... We'd go somewhere about 7 miles back.
Do you remember the name?
And then we'd come to the agricultural area, you see. And we'd go to... it had all been set, you know. They used to have... people warning the farmer, say that the troops would be arriving and using his barn, say, and we used all the barns in the locality, say, for miles around.
But not in any set place? There's no village that you can think of that was irregular?
No, like a... Well, you see, we'd go, say, like, take Ypres front, well, Hazebrook. That was a good district.
I mean, when you were at on the Labasse front.
Well, we didn't go out very much there in the rear. We moved up from there after Owens-Holland were down. We moved up to Newport.
So you didn't spend any time at rest, or you didn't go in and out of the
no,
line?
No, not at, at the battery.
Surely you weren't in the line for 3 months continuously, though?
When you go back in immediate reserve, that's a rest.
Right, well, I'll save those questions. Did you get parcels? You mentioned parcels. You got them from this friend in Colchester. Did you get them from anybody else?
Well, the old judge used to send me a blue pigeon now and again, half a crown. Postal order, blue pigeon.
That one they call them.
Yeah. But, you see, it'd be payable to the canteens or whatever, if you ever got to one.
What else? Would anyone else send you parcels?
No, I didn't need them, really.
And the friend in Colchester sent... What you put in the parcels? You mentioned cigarettes and the pomade.
Yeah.
What else would there be?
Paper jumbo. Nothing else. I didn't ask her for anything.
Would you write regularly home?
I wrote very often.
And who would you write to?
I only wrote to my mother and this lady in Colchester.
And did they write?
I used to write when I first went out to three or four ladies. So you know, I had to be very careful. I used the right envelope. See? But, the one that was of good service to me, and the one I thought a lot about at one time, but although I told her when we met that I didn't think anything would come about it,
yes.
Because my future wasn't there.
And how often would they write back?
They used to get one a fortnight, say.
Were letters important to you when they came? Did that?
Eh?
Was it an important thing, letters?
No, no, I'm in the pink and all that.
So you weren't bothered about getting letters?
Not necessarily, and I knew that my brothers were, how my brothers were going on. You see, same as one got wounded at on the Arras front with the 2nd Battalion of the Manchester Regiment, and he was back home in England, I've told you about
him. Told you, you visited him,
yeah.